Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour podcast. Three women, one podcast, and a whole load of badass. I'm Harriet Minter, and I'm here with Emma Sexton and Natalie Campbell. And this week's podcast features some of our best bits that you haven't yet heard. Michelle Guimer, money empowerment educator, explains how to sort your money out so we can all be a financial whiz. And trans woman T. Uglow talks to us about gender, sexuality, and just what we mean by masculine and feminine.
Underwear, armpit hair, many imitators, but no one compares.
Badass Women's Hour XL with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell, and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio.
One, two, three, four!
We are talking money. Money, 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 money.
Money. Money.
Exactly. Michelle Guimer, who is a money empowerment educator, is on the phone, and she's going to talk to us about helping women earn and keep more of their money, and also about how we all manage our debt better. Hi, Michelle.
Hello.
So tell me, what is a money empowerment educator when they're at home?
When they're at home, I'm currently 6 months pregnant, sitting in the most comfortable chair in the house. Well, essentially what I do is I help women to understand what their previous money stories are and how that affects the way that they kind of feel and behave with money, and to try and help them have better habits. So whether that's being more confident with it, being able to ask for more in the workplace, taking more of an interest and basically doing better, not kind of burying their head in the sand around their money issues.
Okay. And when we talk about burying our heads in the sand, do you think women are worse for that than men? Do we have a more kind of, we'll just ignore it and hope it turns up attitude?
I think a lot of people have that attitude. I don't think that's something that's just exclusively an issue for women. But having said that, a lot of women do have that attitude, and sometimes when I talk to people, they'll say, oh, you know, I don't see myself in that category. But I remember reading a really great book called Your Prince Charming Isn't Coming by Barbara Stanley, and she was saying that essentially a lot of us women have been raised with this idea that somebody will come along and fix your money issues. And I remember reading it thinking, no, that's not me. I'm the breadwinner in the house and I don't have that issue. And then I realised that actually my mum was my Prince Charming, because I knew that if anything went wrong, catastrophically wrong, I knew that I could go to her and ask her for money if I needed to. And that was a bit of a light bulb moment for me. And it got me thinking that actually that there's probably quite a lot of us women that do in the back of our minds think to ourselves, I don't really need to get to know this very much, I don't need to do much, because it will work itself out or something will come along. So I think it's something that happens to all of us, but I think it's a particular issue for quite a lot of women.
Interesting. So before the show, in our kind of production meeting, we were talking about the series of kind of mockumentaries on BBC Three at the moment, looking at debt and what happens when we get into debt, particularly the one titled Killed by My Debt. As somebody who's been in a lot of debt and constantly fights against being in more debt, do you think this attitude of something's going to come along and fix it at some point, is that one of the reasons that we are so bad as a nation, really, at managing our debt?
I think the key thing around debt is that it's so normal. It's so normalised that it's very difficult to see it as something to approach with caution. but it's also difficult to see when you have a problem, because if you were to talk to most of your friends, I would imagine that most people have a credit card or loans or something. And because it's so normal, you don't really realise it's an issue until it becomes unmanageable. And that was a situation that I definitely found myself in. And I think that is a real factor as to why so many people struggle with it. But also, I don't think there's much education around debt either, because it's so easy to get into. There isn't much education around, well, you know, what are the what practical plans do you have to pay this money back? But also, there isn't much talk about the emotional factors that come with having debt, because it does cause a lot of stress and anxiety for people. And especially if you have, already have existing, say, mental health issues, and debt can make that even worse. So I think there's a kind of two-pronged piece there in terms of lack of education around debt and what the implications are, but also the fact that it's so normal and it's very much, well, everybody's doing it, so I might as well do it as well.
Yeah, we live in such a culture that kind of drive us to just keep buying more and more and have these lifestyles beyond our means. Do you know anything about the understanding about what drives us to spend more money? I certainly know that when I look back on my spending history, that I got into debt at a time when I had very little money, and it's almost like now I've kind of got money, I'm not in debt, because there's almost a psychology around not having stuff, wanting stuff that you can't have, and then when you can have it, you kind of don't want it, so you don't get into debt over it. And I just wonder if there's like, I don't really know where I'm going with this question, to be honest.
My relationship with debt changed when I realised that if you're an entrepreneur, and especially people in business, most companies are built on debt.
Yeah.
And yes, it's not an individual's debt, but it's debt. Money is the is ultimately a currency. And as soon as I realised that no one can kill me, you know, I'm not taking money from loan sharks, so technically no one can kill me for having debt. There's always a way through, and it's completely, Harriet's looking at me like, what? But it's different. So I had my first business at 19. At 21, I had a retail franchise. I lost that franchise at 22 and ended up with 50 grand's worth of debt, plus my student loans, plus all of my student debt. And I wasn't earning any money. And so I had to figure out a way to pay that money off. And so as soon as you've been through that and connected with the, this is part and parcel of running a business, your relationship with it just changes. And so I would easily, and this is completely my situation, I don't get anxiety about being in debt, because I know I can pay it off. And I know my worst case scenario is...
But I think two different things there, which is, company debt. Mm-hmm. And I think actually as a nation, we are very lax about company debt. And that's why we end up with things like Carillion.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that level where...
Companies built on debt.
Companies built on debt, who then wipe out thousands of small businesses because they don't manage their debt. And that I'm not okay with that, because I've been those small businesses that get wiped out by them.
Yeah, but there are lots of companies all over the world built on debt that don't necessarily wipe out in that way.
That's different to personal debt, though.
And it is.
Because a company debt...
But as a small business, I had to take out personal guarantees for my debt, which is why I had to pay off that amount.
But the trouble is, if you get into debt and you're relying on your monthly paycheck to pay off those, HPs, those, overdrafts, if you lose your job suddenly, you're in big trouble.
And that's
very, very quickly.
A living outside means. And so I think the education isn't on the debt. It's that you don't need to live outside of your means. What are your means? What can you afford before you get into the debt?
But that's really easy to say.
Michelle, how do we manage our debt when we're in it, and find a kind of, I guess, a more holistic or useful mentality around it?
Mm. Around money.
Well, I think the first thing I think a lot of people don't do is they don't total it up. And I know that I didn't do this for a very, very long time myself, because I've had a lot of debt in the past. But I think getting a hold on what the actual number is really the first step, because, you're not able to make a plan if you don't know what you're kind of planning for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the second thing, I mean, for me, I spent a long time feeling really ashamed of the fact that I had so much debt, and I kind of let it get out of control. And then I'd hit a point essentially where I couldn't move it to any 0% credit cards anymore.
Oh,
my credit
that
ran out essentially. Yes. And that was a crunch point for me. And I spent a long time really beating myself up with with shame over it. And what I would say, if anybody's in that position, is you've made financial mistakes in the past, but there's always time to pull it back and said not to spend too much time dwelling on that. And I dwelled on it so much that I was like one step forward, two steps back. What I would say, though, is try to find somebody that you can talk to about it, because, you know, having that kind of shame keeps you in a place where you're really stuck and you can't do anything and you feel like everything you try doesn't work. But if you've got somebody to kind of share that burden with, to talk to, it makes a huge difference. And one of the biggest things that worked for me personally was shifting my mindset and saying, well, you know, this is just a number. This is not something that characterizes me. This isn't the whole of me. This is just one aspect of my life. And I have the ability to turn things around. Mm-hmm. And there were days when that I felt like that wasn't cutting it, but I had to believe that it was entirely possible for me to make changes in the next 3 months, in the next 6 months, and to keep moving forward. And that, for me, was a bit of a lifesaver in the sense that I've got control of this. If I got into it, I can easily get out, but I just have to be really consistent with.
And that's the
actions.
Thing, control, yeah. Ownership. Yeah. You owned the fact that that debt was there. No one spent the money for you. That was your debt. So you then understood how much you had. And then, you know, I think people need to cut up their cards, cut the cards and start working out what a payment plan is. And there are things, you know, not everyone wants to go down the route of an IVA, but you can do an IVA.
What's an IVA?
Involuntary kind of consolidation of all of your debt, so you can pay a lower amount. Call the banks, call the credit card companies, let them know the situation. They will ultimately be penalized if they treat you badly in that situation. Exactly. Or go to the Citizens Advice Bureau. There are ways through it. The worst thing is basically sitting on your hands. You have to, when you're in debt, you have to own the situation. And when you come out of it, that's the thing, my thing about, you know, no one can kill me and I won't die. As soon as you realize that, there is someone at the end of the phone who, if you don't have the money, they can't have the money. So it's in their interest to work out a payment plan. So they will work with you on that.
Michelle, what were some of the kind of practical things that you did? So Nat mentioned kind of cutting up cards, calling banks. Were there other things that you tried?
Well, I then had to go through my expenses because I didn't really know what was going on in my bank account. I knew that there was no money left at the end of the month. I didn't really know where it was going. And so for me, I had to have a look and, you know, make big decisions, you know, with my partner as to, well, where are we going to spend our money, and how can we find more money to pay off more than the minimum? Because that was the other thing, because you didn't want to be in a place where you're just treading water. And so, you know, some expenses had to be cut back. But what I found, and a really good tip, was to start using cash when you go shopping, even food shopping, because it's so easy to swipe cards. But I remember reading somewhere that someone said that parting with your money, your physical money, is really painful. So it makes you think twice as to whether you really want something or not. And for me, having like an envelope of cash and knowing that that had to last until the end of the week, until, you know, when I kind of did the budget again, was a real eye-opener for me in terms of where little pockets of money were being frittered away on other stuff. But what that meant was I was freeing up more and more smaller, consistent chunks of money to be able to put towards a debt. And I set up a bigger direct debit. So I set up a bigger direct debit, bigger than the minimum amount. And if there was anything left at the end of the week, that would go towards it as well. Because the thing about having debt is that not many of us kind of, you know, blow 10 grand in a day. It's small incremental steps. And so it takes those small incremental steps to get it back down again. So they were the kind of biggest things for me. And I'd have a tracker so I could see how much it was going down by. And it's a real good motivator to keep you focused as to why you're doing this and why you're not going out with friends for drinks and you know, when you're kind of feeling like, oh, this is too difficult, but you've got that tracker to say, well, no, if I keep on with the plan that I have, in 6 months' time, you know, one credit card will be gone. And it's such a good feeling when one goes, he's like, yes, I've done one, and you can move on to the next one.
I also added in, I calculated the date where I would be 100% debt-free.
Oh,
and I said I would reward myself. It's probably something expensive, probably, you know me. And that was a huge motivator too. So I was debt-free, I I think at 30. And it was like, okay, that's fine, because I know that the end is in sight, and then you break it down into all of the small things.
Yeah.
And another thing that me and my boyfriend did was when we were paying down the debt and seeing it go down, we would be talking about the things that we want to do. And it became, because it would always be, oh, wouldn't it be nice if we could do X, Y, and Z? But then the language started to change to, when the debt's gone by this date, we can do X, Y, Z. And it's really empowering just seeing that language shift. And that language shift has occurred because we've been focused on paying off the debt, because we've got bigger things that we want to achieve. And we're like, we're going to be debt-free completely by next February. Mm-hmm. And I was saying to him the other day, I said, but just think, all the money that comes into our bank account will be ours. We won't have to give any of it away to anyone else. Like, oh my God, when was the last time that happened? It's all those really small things, those small seeds and those small pictures of what you can do when you're debt-free to try and keep you going, that I think are really important.
I love that. Thank you so much, Michelle. If you want to hear more from Michelle, you can find her website at qualitypays.co.uk. Michelle Giemer, Money Empowerment Educator. Great tips there, I think. If you're in debt and you need some help, do check her out. Also look on the Government Advice Line. Go speak to your Citizens Advice Bureau. Do talk to somebody about it, please.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Badass Women's Hour XL with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio.
We talk a lot on this show about gender. And Emma pointed in the direction of an amazing article from earlier this year called We Understand the Solar System, So Why Do People Still Struggle with Gender? Written by T. Uglow, who's in the studio with us now. T, welcome to Badass Women's Hour. Thank you so much for being
lovely
here.
To be here.
When we say, why do we still struggle with gender, what's there to understand? We have men, we have women. Is it not that simple?
No. I think actually what's extraordinary is we're beginning to understand that we don't understand. That's what we're beginning to do. It was such a funny thing that that headline for that article was like, oh, yeah, no, I'm not saying we do understand the solar system. What I'm saying is we don't understand the solar system. If you talk to a physicist or an astronomer about this, it's like, no, the whole point is that when you think you understand something, that's really when you should be looking really hard at it. And we're seeing that happen at the moment, just at a generational level, on the most extraordinary level, when young people are able to understand and articulate what gender means in ways that the older generations are really, really struggling with. It's just sort of extraordinary to watch. So I just wanted to write a little thing and say, it's okay. You know, these things take time and they evolve and we're moving through this.
Can you tell us a little bit about your story with gender?
My story?
Please.
okay. So I was born a really long time ago. Oh, this involves me telling you how old I am.
No.
I was born 42 years ago in Kent, in Canterbury. which, so that's like 1970s Kent. It's not a big town. It's a cathedral city. And it wasn't the sort of place where you were able to go, were you able to question that? So I definitely like had that whole stage of thinking that there was a switchover day where I obviously the little boys became little girls because that must happen, right?
So you were born male?
I was a boy, yeah.
Yeah.
But you always knew as a boy that you wanted to be a girl. So did you grow up kind of, like you say, expecting that you were going to change?
That day would come.
No, that passed by about four. Oh. You know, you kind of twig that actually this isn't going to happen, partly because it felt really unfair to all the girls that they would have to be boys. No, I didn't. And also this extraordinary thing that your brain is capable of these amazing acts of masking and camouflage to protect you. From dangerous ideas, and at the time it was an extremely dangerous idea to go around presenting that, and I still think the bravest people in the world are the ones who kind of do that, because it took me decades, and it's been really interesting on this journey kind of having people who, and it's almost a trope, is that like you read other people's accounts and they will say, oh yeah, like when you were 20 you used to talk about this and then you went back in, and it's like you come out a little bit and you find out whether it's safe to talk about this, and you're like, it's not safe, go back. And then you delude yourself really into your head into thinking that all the things that you think are normal are normal, when actually they're not really that normal. You know, when your parents are telling you, don't worry, everything's normal, these thoughts you're having, they're completely normal. It's like, no, not that normal.
So what should we be exploring around gender?
I think just a general understanding that whilst, like, there's all these normative ideas, like it is perfectly normal for girls to sort of, actually, I don't know about the pink blue thing. I think that's something we impose. But certainly this idea that girls play in a different way to boys. Like anyone who's got, I've got two little boys. Like, yeah, they definitely do. Like no one's suggesting that that's not real. No one's suggesting that biological sex is not like an inherent part of the human DNA. I think what we're pointing at is the idea that gender is not the same as biological sex. That actually the roles that people take in society are often kind of forced on them by the expectations of the people around them, rather than because that's what they want to do.
So just to separate it out, so you've got man, woman, male, female, and you're saying there's a difference ultimately between the two.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's...
And one is prescribed.
So this is where it gets rather gnarly, because if you want to get into it, like, there's a lot of people who have a lot of different opinions on exactly this sort of topic. Mm. And you can get into chromosomal sort of separations of XY and XX, and then there's lots of little complications of XXX and multiple variations, and we can't actually all have karyotypes. So we don't actually know. I mean, we think we know, but we don't really know.
And is this part of the what you were suggesting? We don't actually know. Yeah.
We're not right. You know, we're not, like, there's this thing about, oh, but obviously it's just boys and girls. And that's exactly the same as saying, well, look, obviously the sun goes round the earth, because look, every day it starts over there and it ends over there. So if it goes all the way round and then it comes up over there again, then obviously the sun is going round the earth. And that lasted for so long. Not because... Mainly because it was obvious, because you could see it. Mm. And we can see this difference. Mm-hmm. And so it's very straightforward. But actually, when you begin to examine it, when you begin to observe it, you realise that there is more data, there is more information. And actually, your model doesn't really work. Mm. So all we're at the moment is this place of going, oh, yeah, there's more data. We're not sure exactly how it works, but it's not this clean. Mm.
There's one quote in your article that I just really loved. And you put in this article, you may still think, well, that's fine. Clearly you do exist, but men are men and women are women, which is okay. You're exercising the right to your own beliefs and to treat people differently based on those beliefs. That's called a prejudice. And acting upon it is called discrimination, which can be legal, illegal or fuzzy, depending on where you live and who you discriminate against. And like Natalie didn't agree with me on this, but I really like that because I'm...
No, I did agree with you. On that.
Okay, so we're all agreeing.
On the statement, I agreed. My challenge is that, so it's more of a truth. I want to be able to call myself a woman.
Mm.
And it's what I, when we were initially talking about it, for me, I don't feel comfortable just saying, well, let's just blur the lines and not have any lines, because I've worked really hard to be able to call myself woman. So that was the start of the conversation. The discrimination piece, obviously, I agree.
Yeah, I think there's a really interesting thing about, like, because again, it's complicated. Like, there's this binary idea, and then there's lots of people who are born with female chromosomes, for example, who consider themselves non-binary, who don't really want to fit into any of these categories. Mm-hmm. And it's just this slight separation of, like, role playing and what is expected of us in those roles. Mm-hmm. And it's awful to bring it down to biology, because there are lots of other different forms of defining things. And if we do want to bring it down to biology, we've just explained we can't prove that. Mm-hmm. So just looking is not going to do it. So, yeah, I think that there are definitely clear gender roles. I'm kind of binary. Like, I present as a woman, and I'm much, much happier. I was just thinking that marching through Soho.
That was my next question, actually. After so many years, obviously not feeling totally yourself, do you feel yourself now?
Yeah. Sometimes I forget, you know, which is nice. And then I remember that I'm 6 foot tall. And I wish I was a bit shorter. But then I was... the woman in the shop today was saying, yes, I shop. I'm going to go shop online for a smaller waist size. Like, you can't have everything you want. Yeah.
Where do you stand on this idea that actually in schools we shouldn't be teaching boys and girls about gender? We should actually... just gender neutralise everything and you pick where you want to be and it's fine.
I think the school is going to be led by the kids, to be perfectly honest. Yeah. I mean, I know that there's a lot of conversation about this, there's a lot of discussion about it, but when it comes to these conversations, they're being led by that generation. They're not being led by some kind of education body. Yeah. And it's really troubling in this country particularly, because I'm not from... I mean, I am from the UK, but I live in Australia and I work a lot in America, so, and I travel around the world. And it's really troubling what the situation in the UK, where there are a lot of people who feel that they have a right to say, this is how it should be and this is how it should be done, without listening to the people who are actually in that situation. And it's very similar to feminism and race and a load of other issues, disabilities, like where you're there going... let's listen to the people involved, and maybe that would be a good place to start, rather than there's a lot of assumptions and people get very kind of aggressive, really.
Mm. Yeah. Do you think we are, as a society, becoming more open to conversations about gender? Or because what I see is more conversations happening, mm-hmm. but almost within those conversations, a polarizing of opinion. And people can't feel like they can't hang out. Ironically, people feel like they can't hang out in the middle. They've got to go one way or the other.
I just to jump in there, but I think that's because people don't have the vocabulary. Yeah. It's so new. It's a bit like if we were trying to talk about the solar system and talk about planets other than the 9, I think we were told that there were in school, and maybe there's 10 or something.
You don't have
Pluto got
Pluto.
Yeah,
yeah. It's just a rock.
Yeah. So if you don't have the vocabulary, how do you start to have a conversation? If you don't have the language, how do you start to have a conversation? If you've only ever known one thing, all you can really say is, well, I don't know, but there is no replacement in information to enable you to converse and converse in a way that makes sense to both parties.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, and that's kind of the point of this article. It's just like, this isn't an overnight thing. It's not like we all got it wrong and now we've all got to get it right. That's not how this works. This is about understanding that something is a little bit more complicated than we thought it was. Mm. And it would be really nice if it was a clean, oh no, it's not this one, it's this one. But it's not. That's just not how these things work.
Yeah.
And the sooner we understand that we are part of an ongoing conversation that will take another 20 or 30 years, probably, although the speed we move these days, who knows? Yeah. I mean, certainly in the last 20 or 30 years, it's gone from something which I couldn't possibly have talked about to something that I can live and be and feel very comfortable in.
Has there been any kind of studies or real understanding about what causes that kind of biological disconnect about how people, you know, some people's bodies match what they feel in their heads and their brains versus people like yourself where it just didn't correlate?
So medically, like, the term is a gender dysphoria. And gender dysphoria is exactly what you described, this sensation that the role and the place you feel in the world does not align with the biology of your body, to use a clumsy term. And they don't know. This is science. This is neuroscience, really, because actually it's not about genitals and it's not actually about your DNA. It's about your head. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where your gender lives. So it's about how you identify. And there are, so if you go on the NHS, they very comfortably say, yes, there are different phases in the gestation period and different chromosomal washes come through your body in the womb, and that's actually the point at which your brain may just develop slightly differently. And it's a tiny, tiny number of people. I mean, it shouldn't get blown out of proportion. But it's not known, and I'm sure that's something which will develop over time. And again, lots of people have lots of different opinions and they're not afraid to share them.
We are definitely not, and we appreciate you sharing yours. Thank you so much.
It's a great pleasure.
Uglow. Lovely quote, gender lives in the head. I like that. I'm going to think about it.
One, two, three, four!
This has been the Badass Women's Hour podcast. We hope you've loved it as much as we do. If you did, rate and review us, give us 5 stars, and then come have a chat with us at Badass Women's Hour HR on all the socials, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, you name it, we're there.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.